Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the March 16th issue of the Arizona Republic. The title of the article is Trump Seeks Federal Workforce Overhaul. Aaron Mansfield and Sarah D. Weyer wrote this article for USA Today, and it was reprinted in the Arizona Republic. An examination of seven of the ways changes have already been made. President Donald Trump has spent the first 2 months of his administration dramatically overhauling the federal workforce and instituting new rules for personnel changes that would give him more control over agency employees. Guided by White House advisor Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency aides, the Trump administration has already laid off tens of thousands of federal workers across this country, including employees of the National Park Service, Department of Agriculture, Veterans Affairs, Education Department, Internal Revenue Service, and the National Institutes of Health. As the federal layoffs accelerate, here are some ways Trump and DOGE have already changed the federal workforce. First, buyout offers. About 75,000 federal employees, or 3.3% of the federal government's 2.3 million workers, accepted Trump's buyout offer early on, which was made soon after he took office. That figure represents less than 5% to 10% of the workforce that the White House projected would accept the buyouts. Trump's offer promised 8 months of pay and benefits to federal employees through September in exchange for their immediate resignation. Democrats and unions warned federal workers not to trust the deal. Then there are firing probationary workers. Tens of thousands of probationary workers across the government were laid off starting in early February. Many received that same letter saying that they were being fired for poor or unsatisfactory performance despite receiving glowing performance reviews earlier. A probationary employee normally fits into one of three categories: a new hire, an existing employee who switched federal departments, or someone who was promoted. Judge William Alsup of the United States District Court for the Northern California District ruled that the Office of Personnel Management lacked authority and acted out of bounds by ordering agencies to fire employees. That case is ongoing. More firing power over employees. The Trump administration has created a new system now for performance reviews for high-level managers with a classification known as Senior Executive Service. At Trump's directive, OPM created a system that makes it harder now to get a perfect performance review and requires these executives to be fired or reassigned if they score poorly. OPM said in a memo that the employees do not have to personally or politically agree with the administration's policies, but that they are required to faithfully implement administration policies to the best of their ability. Failure to do so might be grounds for dismissal. Limiting union contracts. In a January 31st memo to agency heads, Trump said his administration would not honor the contracts that unions negotiated with President Joe Biden's administration in the last 30 days of his tenure, arguing that they were designed to bind his ability to government. The Department of Homeland Security announced on March 7th that it would be ending collective bargaining for 47,000 employees of that agency that handles airport security. Everett Kelly, who is president of the American Federation of Government Employees, slammed the move as merely a pretext for attacking the rights of regular working Americans across the country because they happen to belong to a union. return to office mandates. The day that he took office, President Trump signed an executive order directing department heads to require federal employees to return to work in person at their respective duty stations on a full-time basis immediately, with exemptions allowed, officially ending COVID-19 era flexibilities that had allowed about half of civilian federal employees to work from home at least some of the time. Before that order, 5-4% of federal employees performed their work duties fully on-site, according to an August Office of Management and Budget study that examined the majority of workers. Trump has said that he believes federal employees working from home are not spending the whole day working. Then there are hiring freezes. On his first day in office, Trump also ordered a freeze on hiring new federal employees until April 19th. That order exempted military personnel and positions related to immigration enforcement, national security, or public safety. That freeze has meant an end to seasonal hiring, including thousands of wildfire fighters and National Park Service summer workers, firing heads of key labor boards. Then in early February, Trump fired three key people in charge of the agencies that helped us to protect federal workers from unlawful practices. All were nominated by Biden and confirmed by the Senate, and all had job protections that prevented presidents from firing them except in certain situations. But Trump fired them anyway, and his administration has gone on to court to argue that firing them is his right as the head of the executive branch, and that laws saying otherwise are unconstitutional. One of the firings was Hampton Dellinger, who ran the Office of Special Counsel and successfully got the Merit Systems Protection Board, which acts as a court in cases involving federal employees, to temporarily pause the firings of thousands of workers. A court upheld his firing this month. Then another was Kathy Harris, who was a member of the Merit Systems Protection Board. A court has temporarily reinstated her. And the third was Susan Grundman, who was the head of the Federal Labor Relations Authority, which handles disputes between unions and the government. A court has now ordered her to be reinstated. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Wall Street Journal, the 22nd of March, Why Some People Favor Firing Federal Workers. This article was written for the Journal by Scott Calvert and Harriet Torrey. Retired business owner Catherine Byrd is thrilled with President Trump's push to shrink what she considers a bloated federal workforce, and she isn't at all concerned for the tens of thousands of people losing their jobs. "I don't feel bad for them a bit. I've worked in the private sector all my life and got laid off from jobs in the early days," the Georgia resident said. "You know what you do? You go out and find another job, and there are plenty of jobs to find." While there is an outcry over thousands of federal workers losing their jobs to Department of Government efficiency cuts and the chaos that has unleashed, a cohort of Americans now are not sorry to see them go. Politics, personal experiences, filing taxes, or time in interminable post office and DMV lines lead many people to take a dim view of government workers at all levels. Resentment also stems from a sense that federal workers enjoy perks such as guaranteed pensions, which are rare in the private sector. Government employees overall have long experienced a lower rate of layoffs than their private sector counterparts, especially during shocks such as the early days of COVID-19, data from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis show. Federal employees also tend to spend less time unemployed because they are likely to lose their jobs than workers in the private sector, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. How many people get fired from a government position? Not many, said Randy Johnson, who is 75 and a retired math teacher in Tennessee, who voted for Trump. He also said he does not hear enough about how the cuts might be a good thing to try to reduce the size of government. The idea that government workers are a problem, not a plus, has long been a talking point on the right. Former President Ronald Reagan famously quipped that the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Trump has said he thinks the federal payroll is laden with people who are not doing their jobs. Polls show public trust in the federal government has plunged over the past 7 decades. Pew Research Center surveys in recent years show Americans roughly split on whether or not the government is too big or too small, but there is a stark partisan divide. A Pew poll this year found 38% of Republicans expressing confidence in federal career employees, compared with 72% of Democrats. Democrats have tended to favor a government that does more to solve problems. Republicans have been more likely to say the government does too much, says Jocelyn Kiley, the Pew Research Center's Director of Politics Research. The country cut more than 400,000 federal jobs during the 8-year Clinton administration. Robert Shapiro, who is professor of government at Columbia University, said public support for federal workers varies widely, with agencies such as the military, Social Security, Medicare, and national parks generally viewed more favorably. There is actually a lot more support for specific aspects of a more expansive government, he said. Polling reveals a more muddled view of DOGE's workforce slashing efforts. A Reuters Ipsos poll this month showed that 59% was supported downsizing the government, and another poll this month conducted by Quinnipiac University found 60% disapproved of the way Elon Musk and DOGE are dealing with federal workers. We do need to sit down and say, where do we have bloated government, said Mary Dixon, who is a college professor in San Antonio. But Dixon, a self-described economic conservative who leans left on social issues, says workers and agencies are being cut without a rigorous assessment. If you just say you're firing 2,000 people but can't say what any of them do, that's not data-driven, said Dixon, who is 53, and who declined to say how she voted in the 2024 presidential election. It would be really nice if there were a lot of thought and conversation and transparency. By one measure, the public's assessment of federal workers has been climbing. Citizen satisfaction with government services rose last year to the highest level since 2017, according to the American Customer Satisfaction Index. And while complaints filed with the federal government increased from 2021 to 2024, the government's handling of complaints also improved during that span in the eyes of the public, the company said in a report released last fall. 2 judges recently blocked the firings of probationary workers who were hired or promoted in the past year or two, though their ability to keep their jobs was uncertain. Government agencies also have granted voluntary buyouts to tens of thousands of employees. Recently laid-off contractor Meredith Lopez said that general callousness toward federal workers is disheartening. I think that people forget that working in public service is not just a job. It can be a calling for many people, said Lopez, who is 38 and who worked for about a year As a Dallas-based communications specialist for the United States Agency for International Development, for me, it is really about the ability to help people and communities on a personal level, said Lopez. Judy Cameron felt public scorn before losing her Internal Revenue Service job in February. People would look at me and say, "You work for the IRS? Oh my God," she said in an interview on March 14th. This was before she and many other workers were reinstated by court order and put on indefinite administrative leave. Like, yeah, and I love it. This is the best job I've ever had. And then they just gave me a dirty look and walked away from me like I had the plague. Cameron, 45, made $19 an hour as a tax examining clerk at the Kansas City, Missouri office. A registered Republican who voted for Trump, Cameron said people responding to her social media posts have said, "The president is just doing America good." "All I know is I did not appreciate being fired," she said. Meredith McGraw and Scott Patterson added a small article to the previous article, SBA planning to cut more than 40% of its workforce. The Small Business Administration plans to cut more than 40% of its workforce as part of an agency-wide reorganization, according to people familiar with the plans. The extensive workforce reduction and restructuring will take place, and it will take the SBA, an agency with more than 6,500 employees, back to pre-pandemic staffing levels by eliminating around 2,700 positions. The cuts will affect non-essential roles at the Small Business Administration agency and include voluntary resignations and the expiration of appointments made during the COVID-19 pandemic, the people said. The SBA expanded in size during COVID to support small business initiatives. The SBA also will expand personnel for disaster loan support and recovery efforts, according to those people. SBA Administrator Kelly Loeffler said in a social media video that the agency is done wasting millions of tax dollars. The agency, created in 1953, runs loan programs to provide small companies with capital, helps small businesses win federal contracts, and funds local centers where entrepreneurs receive counseling, technical assistance, and other support. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the Arizona Republic, the 9th of March. This article was written first for USA Today Network, and the title is, "Pandemic Changed Office Jobs Forever. Will we ever return to traditional 9-to-5? Alyssa Guffey of the Indianapolis Star wrote this article. As stay-at-home orders spread in spring of 2020, so too did the number of remote workers. For many, it was their first time working from the comfort or confinement of their own homes, and some happily traded on-site conference rooms and cubicles for virtual meetings and a computer on their dining room tables. 5 years later now, experts point to that time as the death of the traditional 5 days in the office work week. Many employees have embraced the concept of working from home either every day or a few days each week, while employers still are struggling to determine whether or not such a dynamic hurts or benefits that bottom line. Pre-pandemic, we did not even know we could do this. We didn't even know remote work was a possibility, said Jasmine Escalmera, who is a longtime career coach based in South Beach, Florida. Then, during the pandemic, companies were forced to, and we were forced to work from home, and I think that sparked this curiosity. 2020, employers pivot to remote work. So how much can one work from home? How does working from home affect company performance, and is remote work sustainable? Companies and employers across this country have been seeking to answer those questions ever since the COVID-19 pandemic disrupted our day-to-day lives. Many other aspects of our lives have returned to normal now. We have shed our masks. We have resumed air travel and mass cultural events. But for many, the workplace still serves as a daily reminder of how COVID has changed our culture, perhaps permanently. Other workers, such as those in healthcare, food service, retail, factory, and public safety, never had the luxury of such a choice. Before the pandemic, roughly 17% of U.S. employees worked 5 days each week from home, according to data from Statista, a data visualization platform. By the end of 2020, that number rose to 44%, with 67% of people working remote at least 1 day each week. 2021 to 2023, workers slowly trickled back to the office, while others opted to find remote jobs. In 2021, many employers experienced a push and pull with their employees, and company policies urged people to come back into physical offices. The advent of the vaccine promised to decrease the risk of death and lessen the severity of infections for those who contracted COVID, easing the fears of many employers who had not wanted to transform their workplaces into petri dishes. While some workers were eager to jump back into commutes and cubicles, a large portion of the workforce, having had a taste of remote work, now preferred to stay at home. Proponents of remote work cited a variety of benefits of the practice, including avoiding long commute lines, fewer distractions at home, and less reliance on child care. By 2023, a clear disconnect had arisen between managers implementing return to office and employee job satisfaction, according to a study published by the University of Pittsburgh Business Administration professor Mark Ma. The study analyzed return to office mandates at Standard & Poor's 500 firms, comparing policies to employee satisfaction and retention. Ma, at the time, said firms that had imposed strict office mandates now saw a significant drop in employee satisfaction and higher turnover rates. A few companies honed in on remote work as an edge for hiring the best employees. Ma pointed to a flight of highly skilled workers who left Amazon for NVIDIA, a technology company attracting workers through its flexible remote option. Amazon required employees in the office 3 days each week at the time of the study, though now the tech giant has a five-day-a-week mandate in place. In 2022, short-term rental site Airbnb made waves when it capitalized on remote work, announcing its Live and Work Anywhere for all employees. In a press release at the time, Airbnb CEO Brian Chesky said the company would be at a significant disadvantage if it limited hiring to a geographical radius. The policy remains in place today. Since 2020, the appetite for full-time in-office roles has decreased, Ma says, with a growing number of people who seek employment and preferring a job with at least some hybrid work. According to Ma's research, in-office positions take 23% longer to hire compared with hybrid and remote positions. So what is the middle ground for companies? Ma said he recommends an employee choice approach where employers allow teams to decide individually on mutual days to venture to the office for collaborative meetings or board team bonding. One large benefit of this team choice approach is that you do not force the employees to do something, and you do not force this policy on employees that you trust, Ma said. Now we're at 2024 and 2025. There is more return mandates amid a stubbornness for remote work. The headline last summer made waves. Salesforce, one of the early leading voices supporting remote work, flipped the switch and started requiring employees back into the office a minimum of 3 days each week. The change was a major departure from 3 years ago when the top Salesforce executive declared the 9-to-5 workday is dead in a blog post announcing a company policy that allowed employees flexibility to work from home. Salesforce, however, is not the only large company to have backtracked on flexible work options, and few industries seem immune to such mandates. JP Morgan Chase will reportedly end its hybrid policies by March, bringing bankers back into the office. Even some news outlets followed suit. The Washington Post announced plans to implement a 5-day return to office mandate beginning in February. Gannett, USA Today's parent company, offers flexible remote work options based on the role. Since the 2024 presidential election, policies for the federal government have also been thrust into the national spotlight, including goals to effectively ban remote work for federal workers, as Tesla CEO Elon Musk, a key ally of President Trump, lobbies for government efficiency and a reduction in the federal workforce. Yet despite the headline-grabbing mandates that large U.S. firms continue to roll out, remote work is not likely to return to pre-pandemic levels. A Pew Research Center study released in January showed that 75% of employed adults in the U.S. were still working at home in some capacity. And out of 2,300 people surveyed, more than half of respondents said that they would be unlikely to stay at their current job if work-from-home policies were slashed. The reality is that 5 years after the pandemic, many people still are working from home, at least partially. Based on several interviews with employees, the most common approach to remote work is a split week, 2 days at home and 3 days in the office, or vice versa. Others are working from home every day as a non-negotiable going forward. For Amy Norwalk, a 52-year-old public relations professional based in Indianapolis, remote work has been a reality of life for 10 years now, long before the pandemic popularized the practice. She views remote work as a flexible option that does not hinder her performance for her company, and she hopes employers recognize the value of hiring based on skills, not on location. I hope employers will not scare away employees by the return to work, because I do think it's all about trust, and it's all about getting the work done regardless of where it's done, Norwalk said. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope that you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader. And you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.